ESPN WKTI and WKTI HD Milwaukee.
A locally owned Good Karma brand station.
It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
The best 60 minutes of your day, the Tuesday Homer Hour, normally with Jason Woolley. Jason Woolley is on assignment, and so he will be replaced by 755, formerly known as Jerry Augustine, who's now becoming very famous. He was always kind of famous, but yesterday was the 50th anniversary of the day he pitched, won the game in which Hank Aaron hit his final 755th home run, July 20th, and we have discussed this before, that if I had done it, I would have asked Hank never to hit another home run the rest of the year. He didn't hit that many his final year, but if I had said that, Hank would have said, well, start a few more times because that's not going to be my last one. It turned out to be. So you had yesterday this ceremony and the mural, and you had Mrs. 755, Mrs. Hank Aaron. Don't think she goes by that, but and then 755 himself, formerly known as Jerry Augustine, discussed on yesterday's show that my suggestion that he change his name, I think the best part would be probably to change his middle name to Jerry 755 Augustine. But they had a ceremony and the mural, and then they had an essay that somebody written that was a part of it with Bud Selig. So only appropriate now that the whole world is learning about 755, formerly known as Jerry Augustine, to have him discuss talking to Hank Aaron's wife, who looks fantastic. I don't know her age, but I'm guessing she's probably got to be about 85. Very energetic. She was in the studio when she was talking to Brian Anderson and Bill Shorter. The Brewers hit a home run, so she was good luck there as well. Yesterday, the Miz won easily. Peralta's we'll ask 755, formerly known as Jerry Augustine, in a little bit, but he's just a mess. His stuff's not very good, or he throws pitches that he shouldn't throw. It was just too easy. There was nothing about him at any point in time where he seemed dominant. It is 5:02. Yes, the Brewers have an evening home game, so you go to YouTube. I took the YouTube piece of paper yesterday, by the way. Whenever or wherever you're listening, you know we're live on YouTube as well. It's taking over all podcasts. Everybody wants to see the people in addition to hear them. Subscribe on YouTube. You can watch the show, see what's happening in the studio, comment along with us, and when the Brewers have a home game, you will find out if the dome is open or closed. You have to go to ESPN Milwaukee and then hit YouTube. Just search ESPN Milwaukee on YouTube and subscribe today right about this time. By watching this, you'll find out if the dome is opened or closed. And that information has now just been available. You don't have to actually watch at 5:02. Anytime after 5:02, you will be able to discover very soon and very quickly, unless maybe you're from Chicago, then I can explain it to you if necessary, as to whether or not the dome is opened or closed. But anyway, the issue is whether you would want Peralta on the Brewers, and the answer to me is not even close. I wouldn't give anything for him. I think they're better than what they have now than him. Now, on the other hand, if the Brewer pitching peeps feel like they could solve it, then I probably would still vote against it. I can't believe they can solve it and turn somebody who's a mess, nothing. Nobody had any difficulty hitting him. When you face a good pitcher, be it Miz or somebody else, even if you get a hit, you can see just how tough it generally is. So, no, I don't. The Mets are a mess. I wonder if they're going to fire David Stearns. They've got players that are supposed to be good, and they're, as the Brewers are more than 20 above 500, aren't they more than 20 below 500? They're a mess. The Marlins, on the other hand, to me, they impressed me. Very, very smart baseball. And you don't want to play the Dodgers. But I never thought I would say I don't want to play the Marlins. They've got some great hitters and they play smart. They're good. I don't know. Whatever their record is, I thought they played smart and they'd be a challenge for the Brewers and anybody. It'd be nice if somebody else could knock the Dodgers out. But Freddy Peralta, nope, not even the slightest bit interested. So, Jason Willie on assignment. 755, formerly known as Jerry Augustine, will get the latest on Miz. And it was brought up by Ben Brust, and it's worth noting that the Miz's fastball dropped from 104 to 97. I had not seen anything, and when I watched, I didn't catch him at the very end. I caught him at the beginning. They had the Mets in one inning. He had like first and third and nobody out, and he was able to get Soto into a double play because that could have been a big inning. And all I state now as far as Miz, not just how fast, but if you were around and you remember how great CC Sabathia was when they got him midseason, his numbers are historically good, but the Miz's are even better. The Miz this season has been pitching better than CC Sabathia did when he joined, what was July 1st, and I think went 11-2. He was unhittable. The Miz is even more unhittable than CC Sabathia. Whatever you may have thought about how good Miz is, maybe he could throw fast or whatever, there's nobody who expected that at this point in the season, July 21st, that you would have the Miz or any pitcher in the history of the Brewers ever be more dominant than CC Sabathia was during that portion. And it's not ranked as one of the great seasons because he joined the Brewers midseason. But as far as the number ERA plus that I talk about, you have the greatest Pedro Martinez, and I think CC would be somewhere near that, but not as good as the Miz. The Miz, I think, is third behind Pedro Martinez and Greg Maddux 1 year when he was unhittable. And as has been mentioned to me, he probably did get a little benefit from the umpires back then, which would not be the case. And I love when there's the discussion of using the computer or whatever shows how good the umps are. How do you get away with saying something like that? It's just idiotic. What it shows is that the machine is better than the person. And so why are you using the person? Please feel free to answer that. And you also see that some of the umps are just bad. Now, there have been a few that have taken a buyout and they're going to be done. The machine shows only one thing. A person shouldn't be doing it. Okay. How can there be any discrepancy? And why is it necessary to say, you know, this really shows how good the umps are? This isn't about how good the umps are. This is there a better way to do it? The what is it called in soccer? The VAR? That's what they all should be called. Baseball is a VAR. Football has a VAR. They're all VARs. That's what they should be known as. Not that we'd ever want to copy soccer, but that's what they are, VARs. Baseball's is a VAR. Basketball's a VAR. That's all. But if I was doing the games, I just wouldn't bring it up ever to say, well, it really shows you how good the umpires are. Like you would have a player who's 90% as good as another player. Oh, that player's really good. You got a better player sitting on the bench. So, yes, what has this shown to anyone? The benefit of having it. And they should, the machine, the VAR, they should be calling every ball or strike. You need an ump back there to be in charge of everything and run it. But the ability to have that assistance in is just, I can't comprehend how it's like arguing if 2 and 2 is 4. And somebody says, well, it's always been 5 to this point, so we'll just keep it at 5. No, it's, there's nobody. It's impossible to dispute that it has made baseball better because it's a strike. And it's now being called a strike more often. And it's a ball, and it's being called a ball more often. There is and never has been any need for any human element in officiating. Unless that's the best way you can do it. And it used to be, but not anymore. Yes, I support the total elimination of division of decisions made by a human as far as officiating. They will still be in charge. And they're in control and they take advantage of all the VAR that's available. But having a human make a decision in which a VAR can do it better is idiotic. And I'm probably being nice. So should they get rid of me if there's an AI homer that's better than me? Yeah, I guess. I don't really know that it's exactly the same, but because then I don't want robot athletes. That may exist, but I don't have the same opinion. That's what the game is about. The game is creating officiating so that, as close as possible, it's determined by the players, not the umps. And the offsides in soccer, they don't know soccer, or the different plays that exist in the history of all the sports, is sad when you realize and now notice that mistakes were made because they didn't have the ability to use VAR. 7:55, formerly known as Jerry Augustine, next. It is an honor, and he was there as well he should have been on the 50th anniversary of 7:55 with Billy Aaron, the wife of the late Hank Aaron, Bud Selig, and 7:55 himself, formerly known as Jerry Augustine. 7:55, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Homer. And I want to thank you because you gave me the impetus to call the Brewers and find out what's going on and asking if I could be involved just a little bit by coming down, going down and being a part of the event. And it's a special honor to pitch the game that Hank hit number 7:55, but yesterday brought back a lot of great memories. And when you think about the years of baseball in Milwaukee of 75 and 76 when Hank Aaron was here, I don't think there's a better three people that you could have known than Hank Aaron, Bud Selig, and Bob Uecker.
And you, because you're a part of all of that time. You were just a kid when you were pitching and Hank Aaron was on the team, right?
It was my second year in the big league.
Yeah, you were 12, 14? You just got out of Little League, and then you went from Little League.
No, you were 21, just 21, 22 years old. And being a part of that, and, you know, I found out yesterday that not only did I pitch in number 7:55, I also pitched in 7:54. And then I also had the opportunity, if anybody remembers, at the end of the year, they had a Hank Aaron night against the Yankees on a Friday night. I actually pitched that game also. So when it comes to Hank Aaron and memories, I mean, when I was growing up, I was Hank Aaron, Eddie Matthews,
Warren Spahn, and Lou Burdett. Did he ever say, how come that kid pitches every time? Come on.
He
was the best pitcher on the team then? Was Caldwell? Who was on the team?
Mike wasn't there yet, I was very fortunate.
Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
To do some great things. And I remember one time I was sitting on a bench and I had pitched a great ball game and got lucky. I came down and he said, hey, kiddo, you keep the ball down, you get ahead of hitters, you're going to have a fun career. That was a great job yesterday. Coming from Hank Aaron, could it be any better than that?
No!
And so it was just a great honor and a special honor when you grow up and he's your idol and you every time you hit a ball when you're a kid, you feel like you're Hank Aaron. And then to walk in the clubhouse, that day I got in the clubhouse, I walked in, I saw his locker, Honest to God, Homer, I sat there for like 5 minutes just looking at him because I was in so awe. And then the clubhouse guy came up, tapped me on the shoulder, said, "Hey, you can go to your locker now." And it was just awesome time. And, you know, I pitched 755. But a lot of people don't know this, but Jim Gantner ran for Hank Aaron in his last base hit. So you take the two Wisconsin boys, pretty special times with Hank Aaron.
Wow, that would have been what, the last game of the season, or I don't know what?
It was the second last game of the season on a Saturday afternoon. He got a base hit, and Jimmy went in, pinch ran for him. And we talk about that once in a while. You know, we're Wisconsin guys, and the first guys to come through the organization to make it to the big leagues, and that's pretty special. Both Jimmy and I have some great memories, and if you talk to Jimmy, you say, you know, that was just unbelievable to have that opportunity.
Now, this is where I wish I would have had the experience that you had, because I think I would have handled it a little differently. I said before, on 755, I'd have said, "Hank, don't hit another home run this year." Hank might have said, "Just keep pitching. We'll probably." But when he said that to you about how you pitched, I would have said, I would have called him Mr. Aaron. I don't care if he was, and he may have said otherwise, but I would have called him Mr. Aaron if I was you at your age. I would have said, "Well, you know what the big question is," and he'd go, "What, kid?" I go, "Could you have hit me today? Could you have hit me today?"
Oh my gosh!
Him Mr. Aaron. I bet people did at times.
No, I called everybody. Teammates called him Hank. And
yes.
You know what? He's, honest to God, I had the opportunity to talk to Billy Castro yesterday after, because he pitched in the game when Hank hit 754 also. And he said, you know, Augie, the one thing about him, he was a great teammate. And he loved the game so much that he enjoyed the clubhouse as much as any ball player that ever played the game. He had got laughs and chuckles out of all the players. But boy, when he crossed that line, he was pretty special, and you could see just the way he handled himself that he was a step above a lot of players, because he was so talented and he just loved the game, and he watched it and he enjoyed just being a part of it.
And I just think, I don't know, like, if you asked anybody, if you could have played with someone like you played with Hank Aaron, who would you pick? I mean, you played with arguably one of the greatest, and in some ways the greatest, to ever play the game.
I agree. And that's why when I walked in that clubhouse, I sat there. His locker was the third locker. I'll never forget it. I sat there, and then Bob Sullivan, who was our clubhouse guy, said, "Hey, kiddo, it's okay. You can talk to him later. Just go back to your locker." My locker was way in the back of the locker room.
See, and you're so different. I would have said, "No, it's not. He's Hank Aaron. What do you mean? No, you can do whatever you want." "No, I can't." Would you say the same if Babe Ruth was right there? Come on.
I did. You know, Hank was such a special person. And, you know, if you ever got to know him and ever got to talk to him and ever got to talk to him, like, on a casual basis, he's so genuine. And, you know, it was funny, because yesterday when I got there, Billy wasn't there yet. And Billy Aaron came walking in. I walked up, and the guy introduced me as the pitcher who pitched for Hank's last home run. She looked at me, says, "I remember." And when she started talking to me, I felt Hank. I felt Hank.
I know she did remember, right? You can believe that. She talked about things like, she's one of those people that remembers everything.
She was an awesome lady. We had a nice, wonderful conversation. And, you know, she looked at me and she said, "It's so nice for you to be here." And, boy, you know, you want to feel good about something? Boy, have Hank Aaron's wife, Billy, say to you, "It's awful nice that you took time out to come. It's nice to have you here." Oh, how special was that?
Yes. And and I like her, and I've never met her, because she's right. You were the winning pitcher.
Right.
And
That's
I heard
right.
her talk when she was on with Brian Anderson. And it was amazing. I almost thought of her like a professional golfer. She gave the impression and gave examples of how well she remembered everything. You know, like she's seen so many games. She even talked about wanting to do play-by-play. And I thought,
I know, that was beautiful. That was so beautiful. And they hit a home two-run homer.
Yeah.
She was all pumped up about it. You can really tell, you know, when you know Hank, and then you'd see those two together, because I had that opportunity several times to be with them, that, you know, how much of a love affair that they had and how much they loved the game. They both loved the game with each other as much as anybody, and they loved the position that they were in. But yet they handle everything so graciously that, you know, you just, when you think of Hank Aaron, you just think of the best and the greatest, and that's what it's all about.
I mean, I don't know all the – you talked about all the things – that you accomplished, but one of them has to be played with Hank Aaron. And granted, it's later in his career, but you're also then playing with him after he's done all these historic things and had those historic moments. It had to be special to play with him early in his career when he was with the Braves and to see a kid that talented. But there's something about when they're later in their career, you're playing with a Hall of – I mean, you're looking going –
the best of all time.
Yeah.
The best of all time.
Yeah,
you know, there's a story. When we had Hank Aaron night, I pitched that night, so I wasn't involved as much as I want to. Some of the guys went out, and we got an old 1963 white Impala, and they took all the windows out of it, and they brought it behind the clubhouse, and we took spray paint, and they spray painted on the hood 755 home runs. On the rear end, on the trunk, they put how many strikeouts, and they put how many doubles did you have, and the whole thing was painted. The wheels were painted yellow and gold, and what they did is, Hank had so many great gifts that night. He was getting gifts after gifts from everybody. They were wonderful, beautiful things. And then I think it was Mike Keegan that got up and said, you know, Hank, we as players were so honored that we had the opportunity to play. We went out and we bought you this new car. The gate opened and Robin Yount, I believe, was driving this car with the windows are all broken out. Players are hanging out the window. 755 home runs, blue and gold on this white car. It was unbelievably funny. And I'll tell you what, Hank couldn't stop laughing. I think he had tears in his eyes. I think he probably said, that might have been the best gift I had all night. But it's come from the players. And when he came in the clubhouse, he was still laughing about that car. So we did a special thing for him. He enjoyed it. He was one of us guys. He loved the pranks just as much as anybody. But, boy, when it came to the field, you could just see that his talent was just above stuff, that he could do things even later on in his career that some guys couldn't.
And I think of and people's view of athletes in some ways determined by their love of a particular sport. But name the greatest Packer, name the greatest Brewer, name the greatest Bucks player. The greatest athlete to ever play in the state of Wisconsin is Hank Aaron. And I'm not even sure it's close.
It isn't. Yeah. You know, Homer, he's just so talented. And even, you know, he just had those abilities to go up there. And, you know, I saw him hit several home runs where he just went up there. And I tell you what, you couldn't make – if you made a bad pitch, he was going to hit it. And he was going to hit it hard. And, you know, he just – he loved the game, and when he was called upon, he was just like every player. And I can remember his the way he used to go approach the plate. He'd take his bat, and he'd take his helmet, and he'd put his helmet on the ground right in front of him, and he'd get down on one knee, and he'd lean on his bat, and he'd watch the pitcher. I can remember that like it was yesterday. It was just a symbol of Hank Aaron before how he prepared to go to the plate. He was just a really special player.
You had to be that great a student, right, to be that good.
He was just so good, but he was so quick. His hands were quick, and, you know, he just really enjoyed it. He worked hard. I mean, when he was with us, he did everything everybody else did, and we all respected him. And, you know, I know it. All the players had a special relationship with him, and I tell you what, I am so honored. Like Jimmy and I have talked so many times that born and raised here, and he was our idol growing up, that when we walked in that clubhouse every day, we could look to the right, and there was Hank's locker.
Talking with 755, formerly known as Jerry Augustine. He was part of the celebration yesterday, the 50th anniversary of home run number 755. And you would have to be the first time listener to the show not to know that Jerry Augustine was the winning pitcher. We had somebody who called in and wanted to talk about pitching. I'm sure they wanted to discuss the comments that I made, which I've made with you, that I don't want anybody to ever say four-seamer. It's a fastball. That's what it is, a fastball. All right,
now
I didn't know this, and I looked at AI to look it up because I was wondering about, to me, growing up, you had fastball, and
right.
The greatness of a pitcher was in some ways determined by if they had a fastball that moved. Now, my assumption,
right.
You could tell me if I'm wrong, some did. I mean, I think it was one of the strengths of Greg Maddux, but the pitcher never knew exactly how it was going to move, but late movement was going to be outstanding. So you had that, and then you had a curveball, which was much slower, and then just had this huge break, and then you had a changeup, which was really slow, and then people were throwing a screwball, which is the weirdest pitch ever. It makes no sense. No one can even understand how a right-hander can make the ball move back right, reverse. But and then you had a slider, which maybe it was new, and to me, that was the hardest pitch to hit because it, to a hitter, looked like a fastball and then would break down and away.
Right. Now, correct? Absolutely.
Now, then when I looked up about cutter because I didn't understand it, it seems to me, again, they've invented a new word. They don't need to. A cutter is, as I'm reading, and it makes sense, is just a faster slider. Like, I thought a slider was really close to a fastball, but the gap must have, they're saying the gap is a little more and that a cutter would be a fast slider, which would make it, to me, an even better pitch because the more it looks and the longer it looks like a fastball, the tougher and impossible it's going to be to hit. Now, is that accurate? Because I'm just going by what I've read.
You know what? You know, Homer, it was true. And I'll take you back a little bit further. You talked about the curveball. And I'm sure you'll remember, the curveball was called the drop ball.
Yes.
It was the ball that went over the top. It's kind of like a 12-6 or a 1-7
they
type breaking ball.
They could curve differently, but the curve, it was
absolutely.
You knew it was a curveball because a fastball didn't necessarily move at all. It didn't have to. It's coming too fast. You can't hit it. And if you could get a little movement, I don't know. Tell me if I'm wrong. I don't think a pitcher ever really knew exactly how his fastball was going to move. Some, if they were really fast, would rise a little bit or maybe they. But that's if the pitcher doesn't know exactly how the fastball is going to move, how can a hitter? But did you over time learn, or am I right that fundamentally you throw the fastball and you just hope it has a little movement? What's the truth?
When I came into baseball, I was known as a sinker baller. I would take the ball and it'd move away from a right hander, move away from my body. And what I did, it was all done by what I was taught younger with the grip on the ball, throwing the ball with the seams and manufacturing the ball with your bird finger and getting on top of the ball and really pulling down hard. Because when you throw the ball, you turn your hand to the outside and the ball would go down. What happened when the slider came in, slider was a slower pitch that went, it was a little bit, had a bit of tilt on it. But what happened now, all of a sudden pitchers started coming down and putting their finger on the seam and cutting their hand towards the inside of your body, not away from your body, to the inside of your body. That became the cutter because you don't turn your hand. It's not
see,
a lot of
I break. Don't care what the pitcher
like
does. I just wanted you to tell me how it moves. A cutter moves the same direction as a slider, correct?
Absolutely.
Right.
A tailing fastball moves away from your body, from a pitcher. If I'm left-handed, it's going to move to your left. A cutter or a slider is going to move to your is going to move into the hitter or move
right.
into the strike zone. And then what happened, now they come out with sweeper, and sweeper is just a way of different velocities. It used to be a lot of different terms they used. When the curveball came or a drop ball came, all of a sudden they came in and they started throwing different styles of pitches. But the sweepers come in, and a sweeper can be thrown hard or soft. It has a different style of break, and it's more east-west than down. And it's just names that have come about since that, they came up.
Ball that moves like a slider, right? Okay.
Yes.
Is fundamentally a slider, but it either breaks a little differently or you throw it a little. It's a fast slider. It's a bigger breaking slider, right? I mean, there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You can throw at different speeds, but when you throw a slider or a cutter or a slurve or a sweeper, it has to do with how much you stay on top of the ball, Homer. When you stay on top of the ball and get on top of the ball with your hand,
you mean
the ball
as
is going to go more down.
Right, and I just want to emphasize, I don't give a damn why it does what it does. You can discuss why it does. I know, but no one cares. No one cares how you do it. Because all we want to do is watch it and see how it moves. Now, and you can one is harder to throw than the other. I mean, a curveball is just fundamentally slow, but has this huge break that your timing is off. Because every hitter fundamentally walks up to the plate having to figure out how to handle the fastball. Right? That's where you begin.
No question.
Okay. Now, the guy's fastball isn't fast, then you're like, oh, baby, because then if he throws other pitches and they're not that much different, then you can adjust. But when the fastball goes 98 and the slider or a cutter or whatever Is it 90, whatever, and it moves late, you're dead. I don't know how you could ever hit it. And what
it's all
you
about
do,
location.
Right, and but right, and your ability for them to figure. But how you do that, I may be the only one, but I don't care. I don't care. I said I want him to call it a I want him to call with the Miz like a however long his stride is. You know, like it's a 46-inch fastball. Why? Because it's, you know, the distance between his two legs. No one cares. We know he's a little, his body's different. We're just watching. And, I mean, I assume that the Maddox, to me, was the best example. And I said Mark DeBerg-Fidrich was great for 1 year because he had late movement. And then all of a sudden,
it
stopped. And then they just beat the snot out of him. Why? Because it was just right down Main Street. And for a year.
Well, I think.
Go ahead.
I think when you talk about that, Homer, a lot has to do with your delivery.
Okay.
And your delivery has a lot to do. And when you talk about Miz and where he improved from last year to this year, the education of pitching in the playoffs was so important. We've talked that many times. But you know what? He found himself consistent. It goes with a pitcher's ability to get to a balance point and from there have good balance and rhythm going to the plate. Miz has found that. He found the good balance. He found the rhythm of being consistent going to the plate each and every time. Now when he does that, it doesn't make any difference. He has a good release point with a good balance. He stays on top of the ball, and that's why he throws more strikes. That's why we see Miz hardly walking anybody. That's why we see the Brewers. They concentrate so hard on having good pace and rhythm to the plate. The release point is consistent, and they don't walk people. And so when you have that, and any pitcher has that, you're going to be a better pitcher because the ball is consistently coming out of proper spots.
You're just such a student of it. Ryan Braun was on, and I loved what he said because I would have been the same way. He said, all I did was worry about the fastball, the best they had. I had to be ready for the best they had. If they – I get one – he said, if they've got all the other stuff and it's really good, I don't have much of a chance. But
you're right.
Apparently worked well. But he's never not going to take advantage of whatever the fastball is when it comes in a good location. So if you faced him and didn't ever have to throw any of that, apparently it's harder to do than people would realize, or he would have been an easy out. And
that's right, and it's all about location. And Ryan said he looked at fastballs, but you know what? You make a mistake, and you look fastball. You make a mistake with a breaking ball, like you hang it and it spins. It doesn't have a lot of break. You adjust to that because you're looking for the fastball. You can adjust to those mistake breaking balls that much better.
All right,
no question.
70-55. So you can say everything you want to everybody else, but you got you got a fastball. You got a slider, a fast slider, a breaking slider, and all kinds of curveballs, and the sinker. They're all sinkers. It's just the variation that they've created variances of the sinker. I can't believe I thought the sinker was so close to the fastball. That's maybe it was. Was it Dave Steeb who threw this incredible sinker? His must have been a little faster because they act like nobody could hit him. Because you couldn't tell.
A lot of your older pitchers, but Randy Jones, when he's a pitcher in the big leagues, he pitched at 82, 83, 84, but he had an awesome, awesome sinker.
Right.
He can make it sink at different. Mike Caldwell, when he pitched, had a great sinker, and he can make that sinker move in two different styles. He can make it go east-west or north-south, and that's what made Mike so well.
And it looks like a fastball because it's the closer it is to the fastball speed. All right, we'll discuss this again. I know you'll still say two-seam and four-seam, but just realize that when you do, Homer's pissed.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Okay, Homer.
7:55.
All right, thank you so much.
Formerly known as Jerry Augustine. Milwaukee weight loss. I got to figure it out. From 229.9 to 205, 206. And mine, I've said, I can eat less and I'm happy eating less and I'll be whatever I want. I think today I was at 207. You know why? Because I had more bread. I need to talk with him if it's true of other people as well. Of all the things you change, as long as I don't have too much bread, I'm fine. I added the bread, and then some of the weight came back. Get $200 off of the Milwaukee Weight Loss Summer Special. Book your free consultation now at MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. That's MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. And it's just this simple. There are no buts either. You can do it, but you have to exercise, but you have to eat it. No, you don't have to exercise. Lost the weight, didn't do any, didn't even walk. You have to do nothing but use the program. Eat less and happy eating less. And I do want to get a little word from them on because you give up other things. You give up dairy. You give up sugar. You give up bread. Seems to me, at least for me, giving up the bread is way, way, way more important. to keep the weight way, way, way off. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. Phone number if you want, 262-235-3980. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. You'll eat less and like doing it. You can decide your weight for the rest of your life. Next. Tim Van Vorn coming up soon. Tune in to Light It Up, the new season of the Behind the Bucks podcast on the Bucks Plus Audio Network, presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Narrated by Jim Paschke. This is the oral history of the 2000-2001 Milwaukee Bucks. I lived it. I remember it. Should have been in the finals. From the Big Three to a Hall of Fame coach, the story about a generational team that brought the city together and brought the Bradley Center to life. From Behind the Bucks on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, the new ESPN Wisconsin app, and wherever you get your podcast, Behind the Bucks is presented by Gallagher. Tim Van Vorn, now, next.
The three most important letters in sports. Even better than those.
TVV.
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 It's Fox 6 sports director Tim Van Vorn on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
Four-time Wisconsin Sportscaster of the Year. Four-time TVV. Good evening, TVV. How you doing?
Terrific, Homer. How about you?
I'm fine. Ben Bruss brought up a good point about The Miz, and of course he dominates the Homer Hour, even with TVV, that he went from 104 and then down to like 97, dropped, and I said I didn't really notice. I don't worry, but I do want to see and check how that compares to any other performances, where if it dropped that much, and understanding that, of course, he missed a couple of weeks. Any thought?
I was at the game last night. His velocity did decline in each of the four innings that he pitched. I thought the vibe afterwards was more rust than anything else, okay, that he was off his fundamentals, that he was just off his flow. Before the game, Pat Murphy had said, you know, you're not going to hit all your spots. Just like a hitter who hasn't been in for an extended period of time. So my vibe read was rust more than anything else.
Did you get the same vibe I did? I don't want Freddie Peralta, and I was just... it was sad. He just looked like he had nothing and was never dominant against any hitter at any time. Take it away.
I am not in the Freddie Peralta market at this point. If I'm the Milwaukee Brewers, do you say they got off him at the right time in terms of a pitcher? I don't know about that. He certainly is not boosting his earning power for next season as a free agent. They haven't gotten much for him. You know, Jet Williams just, for whatever reason, seems to be stuck in AAA, and Brandon Sproat's a question mark, but I am not bringing back Freddie Peralta at this point if I'm the Brewers. I'm looking for a veteran, though. I'm looking for a veteran.
They got to.
I will say
they
that.
They got to.
Yeah.
I mean, they just,
one or two.
Yeah, the better. I don't. Maybe that's, there's no one available. What do you say when people ask you if they can win the World Series or postseason?
Sure they can. Sure they can. Sure they can. I wouldn't pick them as a favorite to do that, but absolutely they can. They have enough pitching that if those guys are in the groove, great. I think they'll get more pitching. You know, if Joey Ortiz in the 9 spot and Cooper Pratt in the 8 spot have any stick the way they have, the way they did last night, or Ortiz has in the last few weeks, that changes the offense, the complexion of the offense a great deal, in my opinion. And, you know, I guess I'm a believer that Christian Yelich is going to come back with something at some point. Maybe not, you know, go on a tear the whole rest of the way, but I just don't think it's completely over the hill for Christian Yelich.
Does anybody try to give an explanation for Ortiz? Like, he hits better when he plays third base? He was horrible, and now he's been not only good, but very good.
Pat Murphy was saying last night, it's like a load of bricks off his shoulders. He realized that Cooper Pratt's coming up. Cooper Pratt's getting paid.
Oh.
Cooper Pratt is the shortstop of the future. So, in a way, there was a little relaxation with that. That was Pat Murphy's comment for public consumption. Sure. I like Joey Ortiz. And defensively, he is so good that if he has, you know, anything offensively, that's a bonus. But you can't be last year in the playoffs, between Yelich and Ortiz, you kind of had 7 men up there. You can't be there.
And they could easily, if they find something better, then it becomes that incredible utility player, a great fielder, and we'll see.
And he's insurance. And he's insurance for Cooper Pratt.
Yes.
If the young guy gets, you know, somehow isn't able to keep it going, well, you put Ortiz back at shortstop.
All right, Devontae Wyatt. How good is he going to the Packers? I don't know how. I mean, he didn't get a big contract. To me, it's all about guaranteed money, and the amount is reasonably small. But they certainly now have him for a couple of years. How good is he when healthy?
I think he's an impactful football player. I think he is a player of need to the Packers. That's why they're paying him as they're paying him, and they're paying him now because I'm not sure they know exactly what they would project long-term for him either. Give him some money now. You clearly need him, and see what he gives you. You know, this is a guy who should be a playmaker this year for you. You saw enough of that in the past to think he can do it. You also have some consistency and some health question marks that make you say, well, you know, we're not going to, you know, pack up the biggest contract in the history of defensive linemen here. So I think he's a player the Packers need to be a playmaker, and I would expect that he would be.
And now I want to know what you say on the Tim Van Vorden Scouting Bureau. Like, he's hurt, but he's one of those guys that's hurt. I think he can stay healthy. I don't think the money's going to change him there. They're question marks. And I'm curious as to how you answer the question marks. You answered the part, of course, they need him. But do you have any concern, or what's your biggest concern about him?
About Devontae Wyatt?
Yes.
I'd say consistency.
Right.
I think he's a guy who tries hard. Some games it just doesn't happen for him. Is that the blocking scheme that week? Is that, you know, the individual matchup? Is that the way the game plan goes against the Packers defense in general? Is his level of play just not the same week to week? To me, it would be consistency. And I think that's true for almost everybody in a spot like that on a defensive line. You get some games where a lot of guys, you go, wow. And then you get some games where they're pretty quiet. So I'm not trying to rhyme quiet and Wyatt, but sometimes that happens. So consistency would be what I'm looking for from him if I'm the Packers.
He's real good. Is he a field tilter think of other defensive tackles for the Packers where you think he should fit in at his best?
Well, the defense was significantly worse without him.
That is correct.
That's where I'm going. They have some other players who I would expect to take a jump with opportunity this year. Lucas Van Ness would be one. I think Edgerrin Cooper has had, two nice years. The first one more of an eye opener than the second. I would look for him, if he's more than he was that first year, to really be an impact player this year on defense. Devontae Wyatt, they were better when they had him.
Yes, much better.
That's a stick that stirs the drink.
All right, Parsons is number one. Number two, who's the second best player on defense?
McKinney.
Safety. All right. Who's third?
Cooper.
Where's Wyatt?
Cooper.
Or Cooper, yes.
Probably fourth.
All right.
Probably fourth.
So you have the same.
I think
you
Evan Williams
lost faith
is good.
In, all right. Yeah. Yes, Williams. And who's the other safety?
Javon Bullard?
Yes. Jason is huge on Bullard. He might have him higher than that.
I think Bullard's a really good player, but if you're ranking players in there are some individual talents on that Packer defense.
And I haven't talked about Cooper. I'm just bummed. I just thought he was going to be spectacular last year, and he just didn't. I mean, maybe in the play, but there weren't those plays where you went, damn. I mean, I can't even think of many in the whole season. I'm not even talking about him. I don't know what to think anymore. Help me out.
Well, I think his first year, he was kind of like a wild colt just running free out there. And every time you looked up, he was around the football.
Yes.
And then last year, he was in more of a structured situation, and he wasn't around the football as much. I don't know if you can go back to, a wild abandon. He was more noticeable his first year.
And I
didn't
say,
play as much, but was more noticeable.
But I always say, when people say it's the system, I'm going, I don't buy it. I just can't think of that many players where you said, well, they were good, and then they changed the system. There's a range, and he dropped below the range that I didn't think he would drop even if I was the coordinator. But do you?
He was steady. I mean, he wasn't some guy who fell off the cliff. I think the expectations were so high. I remember after the Packers won the Super Bowl, Tremont Williams was in some preseason, I remember he was specifically, he was picked, he had the third best odds to be the defensive player of the year the next year. Because if you remember, he was everywhere that Super Bowl season. You know, he had a great career, but he never was a defensive player of the year type candidate. So some of this is just projection.
Yeah, but your projection is more important than others. Now we get to another one. I don't know what the website is, gambling. Have the Packers under 9.5 wins. I mean, I think, you got to help me there, I think this is just easy money. The Packers are going to win 10 games.
Yeah.
I'm
over that.
You are. You're that confident.
Yeah, I'm over that. The Packers are a good team. They're a notch behind an elite team, which means it's like we've seen a lot of years recently.
Yes.
But they're better than 9.5 wins.
Yes. We discuss that next level with the quarterback and the head coach and how good can you be when things aren't going your way. And we'll find out this year, right?
And they're going to find out with their money players to be making the determination one way or the other in December and January, not building up one of the best records in the league because they were healthy in September.
Tim Van Vorn, Fox 6 Sports. You got anything you want to leave us with? Yeah, I always am afraid there's a gem there that I didn't get to.
Just watching it all go, Homer. Training camp next week. Brewers, best team in baseball. Come on.
Tim Van Vorn, Fox 6 Sports. ESPN National next. And as honored as he should be, it's ESPN National in progress. That's what you do when you have Tim Van Vorn.